Hello and welcome to the Inside College Hockey Podcast, recorded Tuesday, November 6th, 2007. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, an editor and writer for InsideCollegeHockey.com, joined by Jess Myers, who covers the WCHA, and fellow editor and columnist Mike Eidelbiss. Unfortunately, Hockey East writer Jeff Howe could not be joining us tonight, but we will have plenty of Hockey East talk later on in the podcast. Guys, I guess we'll start out with something that we asked of our readers when we posted this week's Inch Power Rankings, and that was a perceived power shift from the WCHA to the CCHA after the WCHA had run out several national champions and Hobey Baker winners. The Spartans kind of knocked them off that perch last year at the Frozen Four in St. Louis, and now the undefeated Miami Redhawks are atop the Inch Power Rankings, and Michigan State, and Notre Dame are also off to fine starts this season. Jess, your take on the current status of the WCHA?
Well, first, to be fair, let me just clarify. You said the Michigan State kind of knocked the WCHA off its perch, and Michigan State won the national championship, but they didn't beat a WCHA team in doing so. I think you'd have to credit, you know, the Boston Colleges and the Maines of the world for their work in taking out WCHA teams in last year's playoffs. Be that as it may, I think you're dead on with the idea of a power shift, at least as of where we stand right now on, you know, November or whatever, this early in the season. The WCHA, from what I've seen of it, is filled with a few good teams and no real bad teams, but no real great teams either. I was with a lot of people in perceiving North Dakota as all but unbeatable, and they're 2-2 in league play so far. I still think they're a pretty good team. I think Denver is a pretty good team. I think, you know, maybe a Colorado College is a pretty good team, but I don't see a great team there, at least not right now.
Is that kind of the opposite, Mike, with what's going on in the CCHA, where you've got a clearly defined, very strong top class, and then maybe things are a little weaker toward the bottom of the conference?
No question. I mean, I think you look at that at the CCHA from top to bottom, and you know, there's definitely some stratification there. You've got that top four, that really solid block of Michigan, Michigan State, Miami, and Notre Dame. And then after that, it really is just kind of filters down and into a group of eight teams that, at least early, really none of them have shown any inclination from distinguishing themselves from the rest of that pack. I think if you had to throw a team in there, you'd probably maybe put a Ferris State in there as the de facto maybe fifth place or the best of the rest in that group, but. It's kind of funny. I think when we threw this question out in conjunction with the power rankings on Sunday night, I mean, it was more of a rhetorical thing. It wasn't anything we were throwing out there as a definitive statement. But, you know, I think you can make a case for a power shift. And it's not, just that there appears to be some dominant teams in the CCHA, whereas there's a little more balance in the WCHA. But I think you just have to look at the difference in between the two leagues as far as players who have left for the pros early and those who have stayed. You know, you look at Miami, a lot of seniors on that team, a lot of guys who have hung around. You can say the same for Michigan, even to a certain extent. You've got a guy like Kevin Porter there who's a senior, even though they've got a lot of freshmen on that team. Whereas you go into on the other side with the WCHA, I mean, these teams are filling a lot of holes of really talented players with young guys who have yet to prove themselves. And, there is a lot of talent there in those freshman and sophomore classes in the WCHA, but you just don't, you think about Paul Stastny could potentially be a senior in college this year had he stayed 4 years. Where would that put Denver? Instead of being just a pretty good team, I think they'd probably make the jump to a dominant team with a guy like that in their lineup. So maybe it's a case in the WCHA of these guys you know, these early departures are maybe finally catching up with these teams.
It's a very good point. Just some of the younger players have stepped in the WCHA and made a real impact right away, especially in goal creases across your conference.
Well, and they've had to. I mean, in a case like St. Cloud State, for example, they've got no choice but to rely on the combination of Dan Dunn and Jace Wislowski, because there's just not any kind of veteran goaltending there. Minnesota Duluth has gotten to where they are. I think they're 4-1-1 so far by riding Alex Stalock, who's a sophomore. Minnesota even got a real good opening performance out of Alex Kangas, who's a freshman in goal. Minnesota's problems are obviously not defensive. I mean, they're not giving up a ton of goals. They got run it up a little bit by Denver last weekend, but they're just not scoring. I mean, that's where you really see the lack of upperclassmen and the lack of veteran leadership on some of these teams that have had huge professional losses is offensive leadership. I don't know if it's easier to come in and play defense than it is to come in and score right away. Now, the flip side of the WCHA, and the one thing I was going to mention, I don't see a real bad team in this league. You know, I don't see an easy game out there. I had Gopher fans or some WCHA watchers telling me earlier this week that, well, yeah, the Gophers are 0-4 in the league, but they've got Minnesota State and then Anchorage coming up, so they'll get well in a hurry. And I thought, boy, good luck with that kind of thinking. You know, Minnesota State is 3-0-1 in their last four. Anchorage has had a ton of road games already and has played very well on the road. You know, getting a tie at St. Cloud State last weekend, and you know, and playing pretty well. So I just don't see any gimme games in this league right now. It's a pretty even league top to bottom, even if it's not maybe a top heavy or a great league right now.
I agree with you on that.
I was going to say, do you think some of that is due, though, to some of the departures we've seen? You know, there's the parity in the conference is basically a result of the parity in talent. You know, there's outside of North Dakota and maybe Denver, you know, there's not, I don't think you can say that there's really a team out there that has a stockpile of talent and experience, which I think is what you kind of need, a combination of the two to become a dominant team.
Colorado College has got some more veteran guys at forward, but there again, you know, they're young on defense and they're young in goal, and Richard Bachman's done some really nice things for them as a rookie starting out right away as the Tigers goalie. But yeah, I think the early departures, you know, it's underscored at a place like Minnesota, where they lost so much in the offseason in the way of Eric Johnson, Alex Goligoski, the fact that Ryan Stowe got hurt so early in this season. I mean, there are a lot of holes in that lineup all of a sudden. And in talking to Don Lucia, their coach, he said, you know, we kind of knew going in we might pay for it this year, and you're seeing it so far.
Bachman has four starts. Junior Drew O'Connell has two for Colorado College so far. Both of O'Connell's starts have been losses for the Tigers. You know, Coach Owens has said that maybe Bachman isn't ready to take on that full load. He may later in the season be ready. Do you get a sense for how that may play out over the second half?
Well, I think Bachman's probably the more talented guy, and I think, you know, it's a no-brainer to go with the better guy in goal if you think he's ready for it. Owens has to be careful, I think, not to overplay a young kid in a freshman role, you know, in the WCHA. We saw that happen, I think it was 4 years ago. Kellen Briggs at Minnesota came in as a freshman and was thrust into a pretty significant role right away, and by maybe January or February that year just kind of hit a wall and had some real rough outings where you could see he was kind of running out of stamina. Funny note about the way coaches work, you asked Don Lucia at the time, is your goalie tiring out? Is he in a slump? Did he hit a wall? Oh, no, he's fine. Well, then by July, Don's saying, yeah, we overplayed him last year. I think that was pretty obvious to everybody. It's like, well, you wouldn't tell us that at the time, but all right.
He's got to stand up for his guys.
Absolutely. Colorado College, Colorado College survived, you know, I'll say survived the stretch where they had to play two at New Hampshire and two at North Dakota. They only got one win out of the four, but, you know, hey, for any team in the country to get one win out of those four games, I think is pretty admirable feat. They've got five consecutive home games coming up now, so good chance for the Tigers to maybe, you know, assert themselves and establish themselves as an upper echelon team in the WCHA.
Okay, Jess, I'm going to give you a chance to do something you like to do.
Talk about Hockey East?
Predictions. Well, yeah, momentarily. We'll get to that. Well, for the last several podcasts and chats, you've started a lot of sentences with, well, I picked blank to do blank. So you're going to, as we've basically decided, WCHA are going to chop up a lot of points in the standings, and there's no easy games, and the bottom of the league is close to the top of the league. Who's your final five right now? I don't need them in order of seeding. Just who do you think's going to the X?
Oh, boy. Who's going to be playing the second week of March and you want me to pick it in the first week of November? No pressure.
That's what you love to do, man.
That's what I'm all about.
I'm looking out for you. You love it.
I was pretty impressed by Denver, so I'll pencil them in as
pencil baloney. No. Sharpie. Let's go.
Sharpie? Spray paint.
No pencil.
Krylon.
Krylon. Can I use the clear color?
No.
Okay. Varnish? Denver, North Dakota, St. Cloud State, Wisconsin, and, boy, flip a coin between Michigan Tech and Minnesota right now, but I guess I would have to take Minnesota just based on experience.
So wait, I'm writing these down. DU, Nodax, my Huskies, St. Cloud State University.
Wisconsin,
and
Minnesota. Wow, I left CC out, didn't I? Oh,
Pitts, yeah. Michigan Tech University.
Oh, when's the
Tigers out.
When's the last time anybody had a flip a coin between Michigan Tech and Minnesota?
The
Jess Myers about 15 seconds ago.
1975 NCAA title. Huskies 4, Gophers 3 in St. Louis. I'm not even sure if that was the score. I know Michigan Tech beat Minnesota for the championship that year.
That was a PG-rated game. Pre-Gladdy.
Yes, they divide the college hockey history into two eras, PG and AG.
AG for all good.
Actually, the two eras are pre-Gladdy and post-Gladdy, but you never know which they're talking about because it's both PG.
Yeah, it tends to be confusing.
As do I.
Yeah, there you go. So it's all good.
All right. Now, Jess, I'll give you a chance to talk Hockey East.
Yes!
All right. I'm going to give you guys a little team here that these are national ranks in four major statistical categories. Power play, 53rd out of 59. Penalty kill, 33rd out of 59. Scoring offense, 35th. And scoring defense, 10th. Name that team.
The Edmonton Oilers. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking college
Hockey East.
Edmonton Oilers have applied for consideration for Hockey East expansion.
You have a 10% chance of getting it right. Yes.
It is a Hockey East member school, I will say that.
And you're waiting for me to guess here?
Off the top of my head, I would go, I want to say Maine, but I don't think it's Maine.
Why don't you think it's Maine?
Right.
Because they're ranked 9th in the Inch Power Rankings, and those stats don't add up to a 9th place ranking?
Correct.
Well, that's the point I'm making. It is Maine Black Bears.
I was going to say Boston College, but...
I would have guessed Boston U because the offensive numbers are so low. But, yeah, Maine is 4-2-1, 2-0-1 in the league. And really, when you look at those... You know, those stats, nothing really stands out. Obviously, 10th best team defense is a good way to win games, but you got to score some goals, and your power play can't be in the bottom 10 of the national rankings, I don't think. But Maine's finding a way to get it done. And in further examination of the Maine Black Bears, they've really got a chance to run away and and build up some big time points in the Hockey East standings, their next six games leading up to the holidays are two home games against Providence, which has really struggled, two games at Merrimack, which are very winnable games. They get Vermont at home, and they get Merrimack at home. So, I mean, you're looking at a chance to get 10, 11, 12 points from those games and really make a strong case to sit up in that top five, that top four of the Hockey East standings.
So those are all two-game series.
No, Providence and Merrimack are two games. Then Vermont is a single game, okay. And Merrimack again is a single game.
Okay.
So,
got
I mean, and they've gotten 3 out of 4 points in their games so far, which includes a very impressive road sweep at Northeastern. There aren't a lot of teams who are going to go into Matthews Arena and get those points as Maine did. So I think they're in real good shape. And they've got a favorable second-half schedule. BC comes to Orono for two. New Hampshire comes to Orono for two. They've got two road games at Vermont, two at BU, and then just single road games at Providence, UMass Lowell, and UMass Amherst after the new year. So,
I think you're overlooking that New Brunswick game on December 1st.
Oh, no, you don't overlook New Brunswick.
It's fighting Maritimes? What are they?
nobody circles the wagons like New Brunswick.
The fighting Newfies?
No, that's Newfoundland, isn't it?
Newfoundland? Newfoundland State? Or Newfoundland Province?
The Labradors?
Yeah, they don't have... anyway. Never. They don't have a Manitoba State, because it would be Manitoba Province.
Manitoba Province.
There you go.
Manitoba Provincial.
Wasn't that on that guy in USA Today? Wasn't that on his resume, too, that he played at Manitoba State? That guy that we wrote about?
Yeah, I think
Larry
so.
Twombly?
Larry Twombly.
Yeah, Larry.
Didn't they retire his number?
All right, guys.
Anyways, it's too early for deterioration.
It's deteriorate later. This is a deterioration preview.
I want to address, I want to go back to Maine a little bit. And, you know, you mentioned their schedule. I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise to see them go 6-0.
No.
You know, over their next six in the league. And, you know, and maybe I'm making too big of a deal out of it, but I'm really impressed with how they, you know, came down to Northeastern, won two games, and go all the way back to Orono, and then come all the way back down and play BC to a tie. I mean, that's, you know, like we talked about before we got on the air here. Sure, they had a few days in between, but still, I mean, it's not an easy trip to go all the way up, back, and up, you know, and back down again. I mean, and as long as Ben Bishop keeps playing well, you know, they're going to have a chance to win every night, and they've got some talent on that team. Tyler's been playing well. Brett Tyler's been playing well for them. Billy Ryan's been playing pretty well for them as well. So, and Wes Clark has been contributing as well offensively. At least he was, you know, early on in the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a typical Maine team. They're gonna score by committee, and you know, they're gonna be a tough team to play. They're gonna, you know, play a physical game, and they've got Bishop in goal, who, you know, who's always going to give him a chance. I think that's really all Maine wants, night in and night out, is, you know, just to have a chance, and they'll score an ugly goal somehow and end up winning a one goal game or something like that. Never count out Maine. How many times have we said that?
A lot. Rook needs to listen to the Inch podcast.
Yeah, he does.
If he can't participate. But back to Maine, I think this goes back to something you said earlier about CCHA teams that are near the top. Out of their top eight scorers, seven of them are juniors and seniors. And the freshman that is ranked in their top eight in scoring has 2 points. Yeah. So you've got a group of veterans who've been through it. They know what to expect. They know how to get the points. They know how to get results, you know, whether it's at Boston College or at Northeastern. And with they open at Denver, right? Was that?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, their two losses on the year are at Denver, who's looking right now like a Frozen Four caliber team. So I think Maine certainly deserves a lot of credit. Another team that deserves a lot of credit, I think, is Boston College. As Jeff Howe explored in last week's notebook, they've had to deal with a lot of stuff, you know, early departures, suspensions, injuries, you know,
fog,
road games, and all kinds
fog.
Of things.
Don't forget the fog.
And they've had to deal with fog and a tough schedule. Is that fog? Fog.
Fog. Yeah,
okay. And they're kind of grinding out some points, you know, and maybe that's the team that everyone expected that would be there, you know, at the end of the year. But they're unbeaten now, you know, in their last six after the overtime loss to Michigan to start the season. You know, it's 3-0-3, but you look at those ties, and they're not really points lost, I think, maybe points earned or points won. You've got the North Dakota game, which was two periods. At Vermont, nothing to be ashamed of, going up to Gutterson and coming back with a draw, and then against Maine, who's playing well early this season. So that's the good news for BC, and I think they'll be fine. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for kind of gutting this out through the first month and a half of the season.
I would agree too, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how this. How this early season and the kind of adversity that they've had to face with injuries and suspensions and, you know, basically throwing a freshman goaltender out there and having him be the guy, how this is going to affect them down the road. You know, I think it'll be a good thing for them. You know, they've had to build a lot of character early, and they've had to have some guys, who maybe, weren't expected to play major roles, step up right away and become key contributors. And, you know, once the Eagles get their house in order and kind of get into some continuity, I think that it's really going to bode well for them as the season progresses. And I think that kind of the resolve that they're developing now is going to serve them well when they get into tournament time.
As far as the rest of that league goes, you've got some teams, I think, that really aren't just not very good. Maybe like the CCHA that we were talking about, that, you know, you expect to get points when you go into their buildings or they come into yours. But that middle of the pack, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with Boston University and UMass and Northeastern. I think New Hampshire will be fine. I think they're pretty good. And if we were to layer this league right now, I think you're looking at Maine, Boston College, New Hampshire, and then BU, UMass, and Northeastern in that middle group. And we'll see how that plays out over the rest of the season.
I think you're right too about the top three, but I think UNH is going to end up being a pretty good team. But I don't know if I've seen enough of them or. To kind of definitively say that, you know, they're a top eight team nationally or a top, you know, in that upper rung of teams yet. I'd like to see a little bit more of them. And, you know, their sample size isn't great enough for me at this point in time to definitively say that, you know, they're going to be right there at the end of the year. It's not that I'm not sold on them. I just like to see a little bit more from them.
Isn't it strange that the parallels that New Hampshire and Colorado College always seem to have? When you look at NCAA tournament results in the past 15, 20 years, when you look at, you know, kind of always in the mix, always being around, Hobie Baker candidates, Hobie Baker winners, well, actually, Krog, right?
Yep.
Jason, you know, you've got all these guys, and then there's just, they always seem to be tied, I think, in that mix. I've always just thought that. I don't know if it has any merit or not.
No, but it's a good analogy, that's for sure.
Yeah. Although they had that big series that we all hyped up and said, you know, we'll find out who's good. And then New Hampshire won in that series, and we're still saying, yeah, but we don't know how good CC is. So.
Right.
I don't know. It's just.
I got to say this, though, Mike. When you were describing New Hampshire the way you did, saying, you know, you think they might be a top 18, but the sample size is pretty small and you got to see more of them. I thought the team that popped into my head, at least of the teams I cover, is Wisconsin. I would say the same thing. I mean, they seem on paper like they'll be a pretty good team, and they scored a lot of goals, and they've got, you know, what I think is pretty good goaltending. But I just think it's too early to write in or write out a team with that much relying on that many freshmen to do so many things.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But yeah, I guess it could, you know, with Wisconsin, it boils down to. And you can probably lump UNH in there as well. I mean, Turris is a freshman, but, you know, is he really? I mean, he's a freshman in class, but talent-wise, he's not a freshman. I think you can say the same for Van Riemsdyk at UNH. You know, he's a freshman in class, but in terms of talent and kind of the level of hockey he's playing, or he's shown that he can play, you know, he's you know, I think he's proved that he's beyond a freshman. As far as
is he?
I'm sorry.
No, no problem. Jess, is he as good as everyone says? I mean, I heard about him when he was 15. You know, from coaches out on the recruiting trail. What are you hearing from?
I haven't seen him play in a Wisconsin jersey. Having watched him play at other levels, he looked to be. A comparable forward with, you know, like on the Canadian junior team, for example, he looked to be comparable with some of their best players. So it sounds like he's pretty good. One note of warning on both Van Riemsdyk and Turris before you too overly hype the abilities of a freshman who starts out strong. I'm looking at what Kyle Oposo has done this year and what he did the second half of last year. And, you know, things can change pretty fast when you're a rookie and everything's new and because a guy starts out, you know, his first month or his first 2 months strong, doesn't mean necessarily he's going to sustain it.
Now that Jack Johnson has gone to the professional ranks, who will Pierre McGuire make up as signing pro during the World Junior Tournament this year?
Kyle Turris.
It's got to be one of them.
who else would it be?
And now more information I pulled from my butt. JVR?
Turris.
Could be a number of guys.
Don't you think Phoenix needs the bump? I mean,
I think they need it later.
Listening to
some hockey chatter today, someone is talking about the Edmonton Oilers. They've got all those kids in the lineup. They're selling out their building every night. And they're not going to make the playoffs. And there's nothing wrong with it.
No.
You know, let them play, let them get better, and then we'll be fine later. So,
speaking of
the Atlanta Thrashers, by the way.
Right. Speaking of a team that appears to be getting better, it looks like you've got one in the ECAC, whatever it's called now, in Princeton, which is, you know, off to a 3-0 start and. Two real nice wins last week on the road.
Yeah, the Tigers are certainly the talk of the league so far this year. That's a lowercase league, by the way. It's ECAC hockey. It's a proper noun. The league is now what it's called.
We discussed this last time, but it was ECAC, and then it was ECAC Hockey League. Now it's ECAC Hockey.
Yes.
So maybe they'll like keep dropping a word every year, and pretty soon it'll just be like East Coast.
Pretty soon it'll just
I think they're going to rename it the
Eastern Collegiate, I guess it would be.
The Prince of Wales Conference.
will it have a Smythe division there?
I think Conn Smythe will be where the Ivies go, and then the Patrick division will be where the non-Ivies
Norris.
Go. Yeah, the Norris for the non-Ivies.
For Chuck Norris, right?
Chuck Norris division. What does this have to do with Princeton?
Well, I don't know.
We could have
because we didn't
division.
We didn't know what to do with ECAC.
Yes.
Since they changed
their
name.
We'll call them ECAC hockey. That's the proper noun. And we'll call the Princeton Tigers a surprise team so far. They've gotten a lot of scoring out of one line, which... kind of sends out some warning signals, but it's really a very good line. So if they can keep it up, they'll be fine. And I talked about it a little bit last week in the ECAC Hockey Notebook about that line with Lee Jubenville and Brett Wilson and Cam McIntyre, and didn't mention their defensive play and their goaltending, which has been very, very good so far, and it has to be, especially going into Cornell and Colgate, which are very traditionally have been very defensive-oriented teams, and they were able to match that defensive effort and keep shot totals down and get those wins, especially on Saturday afternoon at Colgate. They had their annual Silver Puck weekend, so there was a lot of alumni back and ceremonial things going on, and to get that 2-0 win is a real nice win for Princeton. Part of a strange scheduling quirk, which when it comes to Ivies should not be unexpected, but Princeton plays afternoon games on three consecutive Saturdays, starting this past Saturday at Colgate, this Saturday coming up versus Clarkson, which is a real big game all of a sudden, and then a following weekend, which I'm not sure who that's against, so I'm not going to make it up. Possibly Quinnipiac for television, but I'm not certain on that.
So three consecutive Saturday afternoons.
Yeah. Very strange. So that third game is against Quinnipiac for TV.
There is nothing inherently wrong with a Saturday afternoon hockey game. I have to say that.
I agree with you on that.
Every once in a while, and Jess, I don't know if you were ever at a Saturday afternoon game at the old Mariucci Arena, but they used to have the windows on the one end, and the sun would just pour in there.
Oh, yeah, it was like a cathedral.
Yeah, it was a great place to watch afternoon hockey.
Although the goalies, I had heard, would complain that being in that end with the sun beating down on your back wearing a dark sweater, it would be like 10 degrees hotter in that end of the rink than it would in the other end.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Suck it up, goalie.
Exactly.
They
used to play outside when it was 10 below. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and all of a sudden they're complaining hot. About it being too hot.
Yeah.
That was before
Now the glare from the video board. Yeah,
that was before the wicking jersey was invented that wicked away all the moisture.
I did a story a few years ago about the old rinks in the WCHA, like in the 50s. North Dakota played in this, literally a barn on campus, that was just horrendously cold all the time, I guess, because, you know, no heating and no insulation. And they actually kept wool blankets in the penalty box. So when guys got penalties, they could wrap up in a blanket for a few minutes.
That is awful.
and the old Minnesota trainer I interviewed said that John Mariucci was convinced that Lou Nanny was taking deliberate penalties just because he was cold.
Well, the next time the WCHA starts chirping about their national championships and national rankings and fancy arenas, I'll just give them a blankie.
He's sitting in the penalty box like Linus.
Would you like some hot cocoa? Anyway. But Princeton's good start is also goes with a good start for the Ivies in general. They all of them are now underway, you'll be glad to know. And
finally.
Dartmouth and Harvard both got wins at St. Lawrence. Did not beat Clarkson on that travel partner weekend. Yale and Brown got ties and the Rensselaer Union trip. So, and Cornell lost to Princeton and beat Quinnipiac. So they've all got some momentum early in the season, and St. Lawrence is actually in last place in the ECAC hockey standings right now. I don't expect that to last the whole season, but I don't expect them to get much higher than the middle of the pack. I thought the losses last year were significant, and they've got a ways to go, St. Lawrence. So I don't expect them to be an NCAA tournament team as they were last year.
Let's circle back to the ties. You know, we talked about Boston College and, you know, you're looking at their ties with Maine and North Dakota and at Vermont, saying, you know, those aren't bad ties.
Right.
Contrast that maybe with Rensselaer saying, well, tying Yale and Brown at home. I'm guessing that those are two games that that they probably would like to have had wins. And those points, I think, maybe will come back to haunt them there later in the year.
Possibly, but you've got to remember where they're coming from and where they were last year at this time, where those were losses. And they didn't respond well to adversity. And this past weekend, it was kind of a split because, you know, it could have been a win and a loss. The first night, Rensselaer scored with the extra attacker. The second night, Brown scored with the extra attacker in the last minute of the game. So, sure, you want those, but I think at this point and where Rensselaer is and where they're trying to get to, they were disappointed, I'm sure, but I think maybe it's okay for this time of the season.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I talked to Bob.
It is a process, is I guess what I'm trying to say overall.
Yeah, I was just looking in the small picture, kind of taking the narrow focus of a home weekend, two teams that, you know, I think on paper that most people would think that Rensselaer is probably better than Yale, probably better than Brown, but, you know, comparing it to, I guess, to last year and saying, you know, those are games that they were losing and now they're tying, I guess you can look at it from a big picture standpoint and say, you know, that they're making a step forward, you know, whereas last year they may have lost those two games. Now at least they're getting a point out of it.
Yeah, and the other thing is we'll see how they play through November and December because they got out to a hot start last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that was emotion, and then it kind of went south on them through the middle part of the season. So that's another good measuring point for the Engineers. And they've got a great tournament. They got Notre Dame on their schedule. They got a great schedule.
And they're getting good goaltending right now.
Yeah, especially from Jordan Alfred. More so than Matthias Lang. So, yeah, the Chris Thanksgiving weekend, Rensselaer has Alabama, Huntsville, Notre Dame, and AIC at the old Houston Fieldhouse for the Rensselaer Holiday Tournament. And then the December 29th and 30th, they're with Colorado College, UMass, and Notre Dame down in Tampa. So.
And they've got Miami coming in there. Is that correct?
Miami, mid-December. Yeah, I'll be able to go to those. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, that'll be a good weekend to be out there. That'll be good.
Good hockey.
Miami is, yeah, it will be good hockey.
It will be good hockey.
Jess, you're gonna pitch in something?
Oh, when we were talking about ties, it's interesting that you mentioned this because I was talking to Bob Motzko just recently at St. Cloud State. They've had two ties this season, a 3-3 home tie with Canisius and a 4-4 home tie in their last game with Alaska Anchorage. You know, those are obviously games you'd like to win, especially at home. But you look at him in two different ways, he said, because the Canisius game, you know, is a bad tie. Not only are you at home against a team that you probably should beat, but you were ahead and you let it slip away. Contrast that with this last Saturday against Alaska Anchorage at home. Second period, they're down 3-1 and kind of had to battle back and get a point out of that game. So I think you look at a game just based on those circumstances, you look at getting a point out of a game like that differently than if you had a lead.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you look a lot of nights, if there's a tie game, I like to ask coaches and players, was it a point won, a point lost, or a point earned? And, you know, it depends on each team's particular circumstance and how the game went, how their season's going, the caliber of the opponent, all those factors play in. Should we wrap this, or should we make something up to deteriorate upon?
Do we need it to?
We had kind of that mid-show deterioration. So
we really did.
We did.
We got kind of sidetracked by the ECAC.
Oh, there was something else, wasn't
there? Oh, there was New Brunswick also.
New Brunswick, yes.
University.
Oh, I looked it up, by the way. The Varsity Reds of New Brunswick.
Wow.
So not to be confused with the Varsity Blues at the University of Toronto.
When
so
they play... If they ever combined teams, would they be the Varsity Purple?
I think they would be the Varsity.
No, they would be sort of seeing New Brunswick and Manitoba halfway is probably...
No, it's Toronto.
Oh, yeah. Then you're looking at... Central
Quebec.
Central Quebec Americans.
Wouldn't they be the Francophones or something?
Not with the red, white, and blue sweaters.
When I was in when I was in middle school band, I played the Francophone. It's really.
You got cut from varsity oboe.
We have too many trumpets. Can you play a Francophone? All right, I'll try.
Okay, I'll give you one little tiny bit of deterioration. And it's just when we were talking about the mythical divisions in the future ECAC Hockey League, I was reminded of a classic David Letterman interview from like 20 years ago. He had Betty Davis on. Now, at the time, Betty Davis had to be in her 90s. And she's rambling on, and, you know, Letterman's kind of young and is doesn't want to interrupt her but wants to get a joke in somehow. And Betty Davis is rambling on and on about how she loves going to watch Rangers games at Madison Square Garden. And Letterman's joke that he came up with was, he says, "Is it true that you refuse to see any teams from the Smythe division?"
That would not have been good hockey policy 20 years ago. 87, Flames, Oilers, Canucks.
That's right. She probably knew Conn Smythe.
Conn was a great, great man.
I
every time I go to Toronto, I have dinner with him.
I babysat him.
Rumor is they were an item until Lester Patrick broke it up.
I sang at the opening day of Maple Leaf Gardens.
Me and Conn and Uzi Lalonde used to have the best times. Then that whippersnapper, Toe Blake, always used to intervene. By the way, here's another, since we're on the topic of the Rangers, I had to kind of chuckle at this. That I read in the New York
Post. The Rangers?
Well, the Rangers make me chuckle, period. But Rangers super idiot Sean Avery, he's been back for two games now, I think, got hurt. I don't know if it was in the first game or in the preseason when he got hurt. But anyways, I think his first or second game back was against the Devils. And he of all the people, he tried to pick a fight with Zach Parise.
Yeah, I did see that.
Which is,
I heard it discussed.
Yeah, which is kind of like, it's like, I really can't even think of a fitting. It's like Iraq trying to go, or Iran trying to go to war with Switzerland. I mean,
yeah.
I think Parise's had about 20 penalty minutes, and I'm going to actually go and look up the numbers one of these days and see, but Parise.
Mic check item.
Parise is pretty much a pacifist when it comes to come to hockey. He's Lady Bing. So for Avery
he
to
win
go
that trophy.
To yeah, he definitely could. For Avery to go after him is ludicrous. But
considering Avery's dating history, I have a hard time calling him an idiot.
Well.
There's a man who outkicks his coverage.
Some guys.
he's seen things that men dream of, literally.
Yes.
He used to date the 24, the chick from 24, wasn't it?
Yeah. Alicia Cuthbert.
There you go.
Vancouver native.
No relation to Chris?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Just
That was a good one, bud.
Okay.
Did you did anyone happen to see Alicia Cuthbert's interview on Conan? She talked hockey for about 5 minutes.
She's a huge. Well, obviously she's from Vancouver.
Well, yeah,
anyways.
She's a hockey fan. But he was asking her about the nuances of the game, and she was talking about the scraps and you guys running around like a bozo.
Maybe we should get
drop the mitt.
We should try and get her on a podcast.
Jess,
at any point did she say, icing happen when the puck come down, you know, bang, you know, before the other guy.
No, none of that.
No.
That's what it says in the program, Conan.
She was drawing up a breakout on this.
Yeah. Conan O'Brien, telestrator, featuring simple, Triumph the comic dog.
A simple left-wing lock.
Yeah, Sean Avery, beauty. Not really.
No.
I would like to formally announce on the record that I am not a candidate for the Washington Capitals head coaching position, which I think will become available very soon.
Yeah. Did they lose again tonight?
Yeah, OT, though.
Oh.
Oh, I actually have a bit of breaking news I got to share.
Uh-oh.
And this will be announced.
You can't break news on a podcast. It's recorded, Jess.
Well, if it hasn't been written anywhere, the first time people hear it here, they'll know.
It's like the moon landing.
Oh, no.
It was recorded earlier.
Conspiracy theories.
We now bring you to the moon.
We've talked before about Luchek Kunti, who was in school at St. Cloud State and was possibly going to play for the Huskies this year.
Yes.
I have it on pretty good authority from his coach that he will not be eligible this season.
Aha.
So for those of you saving up your pennies to get your kid that Kunti replica jersey for Christmas, go ahead and look at Ryan Lach, Andreas Nodal, somebody else.
And is his name pronounced Lucia?
I'm going to guess yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was that or Luca. I was hoping it was Luca.
I think it is. I'll go with that. Hard C.
Might be Luca.
So we can go with roll out the Suzanne Vega when he scores a goal or something.
Yes.
My name is Luca.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play around with pronunciation of his last name. So.
No. I'll take that.
You got a deal there. You got a deal there.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right. So we'll get.
So
good,
our
good for
objectives.
You to, way to get that off your chest 45 minutes into the program.
So our objectives for the next time we convene are as follows. Contact Alicia Cuthbert.
Or any other similarly talented female hockey fan.
There are no similarly talented female hockey fans.
I can see a story like 2 months from now on Us Weekly, you know. Starlet stalked by college hockey website.
No.
What if it says Starlet dating college hockey moron?
College hockey editor.
I was going to say, one of us isn't married, so.
Nice! I got to go, guys. I'll talk to you in the next podcast.
I got to freshen up.
And with that, we thank you for listening to another Inside College Hockey podcast. Thanks for your feedback and all your emails. We'll try to get them out as often as we can, as our schedule permits. Please continue following the game at InsideCollegeHockey.com.